I think Terry Balcom is certainly a banjo legend. His band, the Dukes of Drive, released last year their second album, Catch Another Dream. It's on John Boy and Billy Ink. And Terry Balcom, who, by the way, is the Duke of Drive, is my guest in the second hour of the program to discuss certainly the new album and a little bit about Terry and banjo playing. Listen, there's none better. The Duke of Drive, Terry Balcom. I'm really happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass, Terry Balcom. How are you, Terry?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well, too. Really enjoying the latest release from the Terry Balcom's Duke of Drive, Dukes of Drive. I have to put that S on there. But for the listeners, by the way, the album is called Catch Another Dream, and it's on John Boy and Billy, that label. But for the listeners who may not know what the Dukes of Drive, why that name is there, Terry is the Duke of Drive. And every banjo player that's ever tried to play knows of Terry, and Terry Balcom is the Duke of Drive. And we can talk about what that means in a little bit. I know what it means because I've tried to copy your style. But so the band is now the Dukes of Drive, and this is what the second release of the name of that band.
Yes, that's correct. It sure is. And to talk a little bit about that, I was doing an instructional video with John Lawless.
Yeah,
he was doing a lot of that stuff, and he just. I didn't even know he was going to do it, but he said, Terry Balcom, Duke of Drive. He said, what do you think about that? And I said, I think it's cool, man. He said, well, I do too. And so we just used it. And then our band is going on 6 years old. And Cindy said, well, you ought to just call it, you know, Terry Balcom and Dukes of Drive. And that's what we did. And for a while, I thought it sounded kind of funny, you know,
but
I kind of got used to it, and everything worked out pretty well anyway. So.
Cindy has great wisdom about those kind of things, I think.
Yeah, sometimes stuff happens, and it just happens, you know, and that's kind of one of them. So sometimes that's the best kind of thing.
It is, and it makes perfect sense.
That's cool. Yeah.
It makes perfect sense to me. And I wanted the listeners to know that I didn't know that I have that. I'm sure I have those materials you're talking about from Accutab and all those things that John Lawless used to do.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. Accutab.
I probably have that somewhere. But Terry is the Duke of Drive. And I want to get into this great record, Catch Another Dream, but Terry, I've touched on this before with you probably the first time we chatted and other people. It's important to make sure that the listeners know as much as we can explain that drive is not speed. Drive on a banjo is not speed.
No, not at all. And, it's hard to explain what drive is because Kristen Scott Benson, she's writing a book on 25 of her favorite banjo players and she had me explaining it in there. I think I confused me and her both more than I helped, you know. But, yeah, drive to me is like as soon as you kick it off, you take control, everybody gets with you, and you are going, and you don't let up, period, for anything. You know, and you're more like on top of the beat instead of kind of like laying back and just sort of playing along. Drive is whoever kicks it, everybody comes in like a ton of bricks falling.
Yeah.
And there you go. You know, that's
I like
about
that.
Way I can explain it.
I like that because that's why I asked you because I've heard it and I can't explain it, but what you said is about, I can't wait to hear this, catch this book from Kristen, because that's one of those mystery things. And well, we could go another area, Terry, tone. Well, you could do another 10 hours trying to describe what tone is. And if you can figure out tone and drive,
yeah,
you got a lot going on.
That's just as hard to do. It really is. But
you got it. You got it.
You know, you listen to your bands when you're first learning to play and everything. And, you know, a lot of people told me that they listened to me with Doyle or Boone Creek or me and Lou, you know. And we had a good band, you know. And I'll be doing workshops, and they'll say, well, what is drive and what makes you sound like you do? And the thing is, you don't try to do that. You just do it. You know, that's the way I've always been, you know, and it's really hard to you know,
you can't
talk about tone and everything. And see, I got my banjo set up a certain way where it's easier to play hard drive like I do. That helps out a lot, you know. And I used to run my action really high, but now I play it way on back.
Why did we do that, Terry? Because we wanted to show people that we could, or what was the point of that?
You know, I don't know for sure about that, but, you know, back then, when we were first getting started and everything, you know, like, sound systems was not to be,
well, that's
you know,
true.
Commended at all, you know.
That's
and,
true.
You know, if you had a three-quarter bridge on there and you had really high action, I mean, just point your banjo toward one of the mics up there and
it'll
they're going
get
you. To hear you.
Yeah,
you
it'll
know.
Pick you up, no question.
So that's kind of why I did it, you know, and then later on, sound systems started getting better and better, you know, and we started carrying some of our own mics and stuff, and, you know, now it's, I don't think I could play that high action again like I did then, but...
We all did it. We all went through the little skinny bridges and the big fat bridges.
Oh, absolutely. I yeah. love them all, you know, they... Your banjo will find one that it really likes and just leave it on there because you can keep looking, but you won't ever find anything.
No. And it's impossible for you to describe. I just thought it was an interesting topic, but unfair to drop that on you to discuss drive and tone in the first couple of minutes when really it's kind of in your head and in your ears, and you know it when you hear it. And you know when people hear Terry Baucom playing, they know those things are in there. Then they can figure out what it is for themselves.
Yeah, you know, and like I was talking a while ago, it's like I'll ask people, say, well, who did you listen to, and what did you listen to when, you know, when you first started playing? What turned you on to this, you know? And they'll say, well, of course, Earl Scruggs or J.D. Crowe or whoever, you know. But it's like, why do you like them? And they'll say, because it's so good and everybody's playing together so well and
right.
everything. I said, bingo, man. Right there is why you like drive music, because Crowe has always played drive, and
yeah.
Earl was the man on
He was.
Drive.
You're right.
You know, so it's, okay, you pick out a band that you really like. Why do you like them better than the next band? If they say that, hey, he's on the right trail, man. If he gets in there and really works on it, he's going to be all right.
It's a lot of fun. I mean, for people like me who dabble, it's a lot of fun to listen to people like Terry Baucom and the people that you've mentioned. Of course, JD, we all did whatever JD. If his bridge was up, ours was up. If his was down, ours were down. If his head was tight, ours was tight. If it wasn't, I mean, that's just what everybody did.
And you know what? What is a hard thing is people will start playing, kicking off something, you know, and then they're thinking about driving, they're thinking about timing, and they're thinking about this. And for a long, you just have to play and not worry about all that stuff. You know, just go ahead and play.
This is a great band. Is this the second album with this band membership, Catch Another Dream?
Yeah, it is. And let's see, I've got some more solo stuff, but this particular band was not working together at that time. So.
Okay.
Yeah, but Fourth and Goal and
I've got that.
Catch Another Dream, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I really enjoy playing with these guys because they kind of grew up listening to what I was doing with Doyle and you know, me and Lou Reed and stuff. And Will Jones plays guitar, and Joey Lemons is the voice that's singing most of the stuff. Will doing quite a bit at this time also. And Joe Hanaback is playing bass, and... we got together a couple of times, and man, it just fits.
It's great
really
sound.
Well. It sounded good together.
It's a great band. They're great vocals and great harmonies. It's a great band sound. That's what you're looking for, I think. Knowing your background, you want a band that's recognizable, and I think that this band, Terry Baucom and the Dukes of Drive, I think that's. I hear it as soon as I put it in. I've been listening to it a lot lately to get ready for this, but
yeah.
It's a band sound.
It is a band thing, and. You know, you got to have the good singing. If you don't have the good singing, man, you are really suffering then. And we try to do. We really work on it. You know, like if we have a weekend or two off, hey, that's fine. We get together, you know, every week and rehearse. And then that way you can also listen to new material and say, okay, we'll be needing this stuff pretty soon, you know. So we'll probably go in the studio maybe around September. Somewhere in there, we kind of got a busy month that month, but usually we try to get something out toward the end of the year and get everything ready for it to come out, you know, with a charge on the first of the year kind of thing.
There are, Terry, there are 10 tunes on Catch Another Dream. The 10th is just, I mean, Rawhide with Ronnie Stewart. That if you want to just pick up and go, that's the one that'll get you going in the very last cut on the album.
Now, which one is that?
Rawhide, the 10th cut. Yeah.
You know, I was going to do that. The Kruger Brothers is some really good friends of ours, and they're not a really bluegrass group,
no.
But they play so well. The stuff they do is just amazing.
I'm convinced that Jens is from another planet.
And me and Jens, the banjo player, I talked about doing a song, you know, their band and our band doing a song together, and we kind of got down to the very end. That was like the last thing, and we really needed to get it done, and they were like out of the country, and they come back in and had to go right back out, so it just didn't work out. So I always enjoy playing Rawhide, and it's always such a killer good song, and I said, well, hey, we'll just do it as a banjo instrumental. Nobody that I know of has ever done it like that,
mm-hmm.
You know, and it was fun, man. It was fast.
Real fast.
It was difficult at best for me because if you're going to do stuff like that on stage, you have to be conditioned for that. I mean, you can't just sit around pecking around on your banjo. When you get on stage, you better be ready to go with that.
Oh, yeah. It gets up and goes right away.
One good thing about it, if you make a mistake, is the song is the fastest gone before
nobody
before
can
you
know
ever
it.
Think about it.
That's,
you know?
That's a goal. That's it. That's, I never thought I was going to write that down. You know, the album takes off quickly with They Call Me Trouble. That's a real up-tempo tune. It's not compared to Rawhide, but the very first tune, I think, showcases what you would want in a band with the harmonies and if you want an up tempo tune, that's a great one to kick it off.
Oh, it really is, man. I mean, that is Daniel Sauer wrote that song. He lives up in East Tennessee and such a good writer. And I tell you, as soon as I heard that song, it was just so good. It just fit us so well. And I said, well, if we're going to make a statement, just go ahead and kick the CD off with that. And that'll pretty much say whatever we want it to without saying anything.
Hey, listen,
you know what
I'm
saying?
If you can book in They Call Me Trouble and the other bookend is Rawhide, the rest of it can you know, that's an indication of what's going to be the sandwich part of the album. It's the top first and last one.
Yeah. And, you know, that's some of my favorite stuff. That we cut on there. Mylon Miller's got some stuff on there.
You've got great. You picked some. I mean, Mylon Miller, Tom Utes, Paula Bree. I don't want to leave anybody out, but there's so many great songwriters right now, and you picked up so
they
many
really
of them.
They really are.
This, yeah.
And I am so blessed to know just about all of them, and you know, and they know what I sound like, and so here. Check this out. I think this fits you real well. And if they say that, usually it does.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Very rarely I'll say, no, that's not quite it. You know, and sometimes I'll hear something and I'll say, I don't know if that's quite us or not. That's a little bit different style, you know. And there's a couple songs like that on this CD. But, you know, I keep messing around with it and get the kickoff worked out and then start thinking about the harmony. Before long, you got it down and you say, man. I'm glad I thought about this for a long time and, you know, kind of work on it here and there, you know, to find out if it really does fit. A lot of times you'll pass over stuff just because you don't think it will and you don't really even try it, you know. So you got to have the big ears and listen to a lot of stuff to get them songs that really stand out and really showcases your music. So
since you mentioned kickoff, I'm coming back to the top of the album. Real quick, but since you mentioned kickoff, the sixth cut on the album, Long Haul Trucker Blues, if any banjo player wants to hear Terry's kickoff and you talk about tone and drive, and then you sort of abuse the fourth string before the vocal, the first 16 seconds of Long Haul Trucker Blues, that's Terry Baucom.
Yeah, it really is. I agree with that. And a good buddy of ours, Hammertown guy, Dave, I can't remember his last name right offhand, but anyway. Dave Carroll, that's exactly
mm-hmm.
right. And we played a festival up in Olive Hill, Kentucky, I said, "Dave, you got any songs?" Because I'd heard him singing a song that he had just written on Facebook. And I said, "Man, that is a great song." I said, "Are you going to record that?" He said, "Yeah, we already got plans on that." And I said, "Do you have anything else?" And he took the guitar and we just sat down and he played that for me right there. And I said, "Dave, that's it, man. I want to do that." And he sent me the lyrics and all the paperwork on it, and I'm glad we got it, man, because that really does. It sounds like something I would do.
Absolutely.
You know?
Gosh, the first 16 seconds, you could sell that one of those camps. You could say, "Here's 16 seconds. If you only have 16 seconds and you want Terry's style and his tone and his drive, everything is so crisp throughout, by the way, your pull off, everything is so crisp." And I listen to those things. But
I pay attention to that very much. So, and I tell you what, I play a Deering banjo, been playing one going on 11 years.
Yeah.
And for some reason, man, that banjo, I think his favorite chord is A, you know, when we cut that. And then you can plow down on that, and it's, man, that sounded so good.
It does.
In the studio,
it does.
Know?
I mean, it's good stuff. It's
know?
A great so, song. Go ahead.
It really is a great song, you know, and I'm glad because, you know, Hammertown's a good band. They could have done very well with this song, you know, them doing it, you know. And I'm just thankful he gave it to us because we've had people asking for that, you know, like at shows we do and say, "I'm not doing that," you know, so, and we make a point of it. Everything on the CD we learn, man, you know, we just do it because, you know, we don't want any filler. We want all killer.
Oh, there's no filler. There's no filler.
You know, so that's what we do. We just do the whole CD, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, you don't get requests for them or you don't get back around to them. You kind of forget them a little bit. But we do try to keep up with what we've recorded on both of the CDs that we've done, you know, just so it will sound like us when we do it, you know. So
the Terry, I do play banjo for fun. I mean, I enjoy doing it. I've had better days and worse days. But I have a tendency to focus on talking to Terry Baucom about the banjo parts. The whole band is great. I don't mean to ignore everybody else that we've talked about, some of the songwriters. But I'll tell you this, the title cut, Catch Another Dream.
Yeah.
That's gorgeous. And I'll just tell you right now, Cindy's vocals on that is, there's a moment in there when toward about 30 or 40 seconds left of the song where it's just the two vocals and a bass.
Yeah.
And that is...
Yeah, it is effective.
She did that's nice. She sang really well on that.
She did a good job on that, you know, and that was one of the songs I wasn't really sure about, you know, like we were talking about, sometimes you don't know if it's fitting you or not. And I kept hearing it over in my head, you know, after we worked on it for a while, and I said, "Man, that is a very good song." And she said, "Let me try singing a verse of that." And I said, "Yeah, go ahead, do it." You know, and
good idea.
Led to another, and before long, we're in the studio cutting it. I'm so glad we did because we didn't have anything at all on either one of the CDs like that.
No. It's a nice, easy going tune. It's a beautiful harmonies. It's the title, so you must have liked it when you got done with it. And it's a nice story about, you know, go down the river.
It really is.
And pick yourself up and catch another dream. I really enjoy the song. I do think the vocals are outstanding.
Yeah, it was a quite a bit different from anything we had on that particular project, you know. And like I say, I know Mylon Miller wrote that. Do you know if Tom Youth was on there with him?
Yeah,
I believe he is.
He is, yes. I'm looking at the back of the thing.
Yeah, because we've done several that they have done together, you know, and then going way on back, like even back to 2013, I was doing Mylon stuff then, but I didn't know Tom at that time, you know, so. Mylon sends such good stuff that you normally wouldn't do, like What'll I Do?
Yeah.
In 2013,
it
come out, and I said, he said, "Man, that's the last song I would have thought y'all would have done." And he sent like 25 songs, man, and I heard it, and I could kind of tell what it
that's
would be
a great,
like doing
well, that's
it,
a great
know?
Recording.
It really is,
yeah.
And he said, "That's the last song I thought you would pick to do on there." I said, well, Mylon, it was good. It fit what I needed, and it's fun. I love doing that, you know. And he said, great. It's a great job, and I'm glad you recorded it.
Sam Bush doing the vocal on that, what I'm just thinking.
He did?
Yeah, that's what
exactly
I thought.
Right.
Yeah, that was a great song. Hey, listen, I was listening to the album again, getting ready. I do this. I listen for this part of the music. Then I'll go back and listen to it. Then I'll listen to the vocals. Then I want to listen to the words. Today I thought, now wait a minute, this can't be right. I listened to the whole album again for this purpose only, Terry. I wanted to see if anybody died in the album, and nobody does.
I guess they didn't, did they?
Well, Brother Against Brother, which is a great song about the Civil War, you could have, somebody could have, but the two brothers were shooting in the dust and the smoke and didn't know where, but there's no, so I don't know if that's a first. For bluegrass.
Well, that might be, because, you know, I haven't thought about that at all, and no one has pointed that out, but, yeah, nobody's died that we know of.
Not
brother
a...
against brother, they're shooting at each other.
Yeah.
They got nicked up a little bit, but they didn't really die like that.
That's right. There's no murders. You know, I thought, well, I did. Actually, today in the car, I thought, I got to make sure I got this right. And I went back and listened again, and I thought, all right, Brother Against Brother, which is a great tune, Paula Breedlove, and it looks like Brad Davis music. I'm not sure. It's a great tune about the Civil War and all that, those feelings that we still have as a country. But the two brothers, James and Alexander, they don't die. They're just living through it. So I thought that would be my best chance because nobody else is going to die in the other ones, but it doesn't happen.
Yeah, I know. Because you keep thinking, well, if they keep shooting and everybody, you know how it was,
somebody's going to get shot. It didn't happen.
And, that's amazing. I've never thought of it.
Yeah, I'm sure it was an accident.
There was no murder in there.
You could put a, like not a parental advisory sticker on it, but you could put a sticker, be warned, no one dies on this bluegrass record.
Right, yeah.
Put it on the label.
I'm just thinking back, Fourth and Goal, it's got the murder song of Mary's Rock, where the guy pushed her off the mountain.
That's right. I remember that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so that worked out well for us anyway. That's a good song. I really can't remember so many songs that were recorded and listening to. I don't even know who wrote that, but it was a very good song.
The fifth song on Catch Another Dream, and I just kind of bounce around as I look down at my notes, is even somebody like me, that's clearly a spiritual, religious song about people who are going to be saved regardless.
Absolutely, and that has such a good message to it, and it's such a pretty thing anyway, it's just a... It's just a really good song. I'm really glad that we recorded that. And we always try to do at least one gospel on there.
Oh, sure.
If we got one that kind of fits with what we're doing, and I'm happy that we cut that one. That one is one of my favorites on the album, really.
And we were talking about Mylon Miller and Tom Utes. That's one of theirs.
Yeah, they wrote that.
Yeah.
And, it's just, they just put their magic to it, I told Mylon, I said, Mylon, that's such a good story. And I said, you send us such different stuff, And he said, well, you got to keep it fresh. And I said, yes, you do. And that right there helps us keep it fresh,
Guys,
doing a song like that.
Guys like Mylon and Tom and even Paula, who I know Tom and Mylon much better than I know Paula. I know of her works. But those guys, I think, just must wake up and start writing songs. Tom just seems to write, and Mylon both, and they write together a lot. They sent me a song that I opened the show with. You can use this. I thought, that's incredible. And I actually saw Tom last year in Raleigh, and I said, you guys should do something with that song. I said, we are.
Absolutely.
it's your song to open the show. And it is. But that's pretty funny. He's a pretty cool guy about it. Jim, you have a tune from Jim Lauderdale, Honey Hurry Home, which, by the way, if I would take that 16 seconds from Long Haul Trucker Blues, take that as a great sample of Terry's playing. I would also say that there's some really clean, crisp, there's a study of backup in Honey Hurry Home from what my notes indicate to me. I think there's just great banjo backup throughout that whole thing, that if you could take the 16 seconds from Long Haul Trucker Blues, and then for backup, get everything down in Honey Hurry Home. You got a good shot at figuring banjo playing out.
Yeah, that is a really good song. I cut that thing with Jim and Randy Coors several years ago. And, it was fun when we recorded it there. And we were just kind of putting the finishing touches on the CD. I said, you know, Cindy, we got that out, and she was looking for another song, and that one happened to come up playing. I said, man, that's a great song. I said, that would be a fun song to do on stage. We're just kind of faded out, and you can make it as long as you want to or as short as you want to, you know. And I just told the guys, I said, listen to this, see what you think. Will sings it, and he done a great job.
It's and, a great song.
We still do that, and that's one that we do quite a bit because it's so much fun to get on stage and do that, man. It really is. So I'm happy to have that one on there.
There's a nice mandolin kickoff on that.
They really are. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. Yeah. Joey Lemons plays mandolin, and he's our tenor singer. And he played the song, man. He played it just like it ought to be played. Mm-hmm. You know? Sounded great. I really do like it.
There are a couple songs on here, "Tattered Window Shade" and "The Girl I Left Behind," which are, you know, those are sad songs where, again, nobody dies as a result of the sadness. But both of them are songs about missing. Missing that special person.
Well, you know, I love "Tattered Window Shade." That's one of my favorites, and I keep saying that's one of my favorite, and this is one of my favorite, but it really is because Mike Garris. Now you may not know his name.
I don't.
But anyway, he wrote the song for Dale, "Sawmill Man." No, it was a. It's on the album "Sawmill." That's the cover of it. Let's see, what's the name of the song? "Loneliness and Desperation." Mike Garris wrote that, and he lives up in right out of Olive Hill, Kentucky. And I knew him when he played bass with Dale for a good while. And we saw him up there, and I said, send me some songs, man. I said, I always love that loneliness and desperation closing in on me, man. He said, I'll send you a bunch of stuff. And all the stuff he sent, there was two or three that had a lot of consideration going on there, but that one I heard, and I said, we don't have anything like that, especially open C. We got a high C, but not an open C. You know, we got a B flat here, you know, so kind of figuring out what we were doing there. And I mean, that's a great song. And Mike Garris, he's a good writer, he's a good player, and a good singer. So we're lucky to run into him because I hadn't seen him in years. I kind of lost touch with where he was at. But good getting back with him, you know, and talking to him. And he sent me a bunch of stuff. There's probably will be another one by him on the next project because I like his writing so well.
Well, now I know and the listeners know Mike Garris. So there's a name on here that I know. If it's the same Jesse Baker I'm thinking about. I know who he is. Great musician.
He played with Doyle, and he played with Vincent, Bailey and Vincent. And he, he left Bailey and Vincent because he had some kind of that thing, whatever, gets wrong with the banjo player's arm, whatever that's called. And he said he needed to get off and rest his arm, you know, because it was, but he could play so good, man.
Oh, he was really good.
Hurt, and I love his playing. And he sent this song and
The Girl I Left Behind. Yeah,
indeed. And he sent that and he said, for your consideration, man, here's a song I just finished up. And he said, no one's ever recorded any of my songs but me. I said, well, I love the song, and I want to do it because it reminded me of, like, 1950s Jimmy Martin. You know, they did a lot of stuff out of keys like that, you know. And I said, man, that is this really good bluegrass song right there. That's old, wicked hardcore without having to get up in B chord, you know.
Yeah.
You can still drive this stuff and have tone and timing, but you don't have to be in B to do it all the time, you know, so. And when I got it, man, I listened to it, and I told Cindy, I said, listen to that. That is a great song, and I really do like it.
I'm glad Jesse's writing songs. I hope he gets full use of I know that problem with his right arm, his right hand, right wrist. It's the nerves just aren't getting to the brain. Tom Adams, I think, kind of slowed down for
that. Steve Dillon had it.
And Steve Dillon, he uses injection. He did, same thing.
All these guys are younger than me, and I'm worried about it to extent, but you can't worry about stuff you have no control over.
No.
As of now, I don't have any problems. with that kind of thing. So I'm very thankful for that.
I think we mentioned Terry, Danny Salyer earlier on a song. Yeah, we did. They Call Me Trouble. There's one other by Danny Salyer, Rainy Day Blues. That's the ninth cut before you get the Rawhide.
Yeah, him and Jeff McClellan. Those guys live up in East Tennessee. And I tell you, I love their writing because they sent me a bunch of stuff, man. And the hardest thing about listening to this stuff was which one do I want to record, because there's like three or four of them that I just could not decide which one I'd rather do. And we didn't have anything like Rainy Day Blues. I said, yeah, we're gonna do this. And I'm glad we did, because, you know, like the one Jesse Becker wrote was like an E position, and this was like a D position, but I played like in a C position to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesse's, when I played it out of an open D, you know, capoed up. Mm-hmm. So, and it's good to have, you know, different banjo sounds, you know, because your banjo sounds different in each key, of course. But things is, sometimes it really, you hear something on there and you hear the banjo and it's like, man, that sounds really good, you know.
You know, the first, especially when you start capoing, when everything gets smaller, that's my way of describing it, when all the frets get smaller because you're shortening the strings.
Yeah.
You can get a great sound. Plus, you can get kind of carried away again with the speed thing, which we know speed kills. But still, when you get in those cramped quarters and the frets get small, it's like, man, I'm killing this thing, and you can just fly through it. And it's because everything's just that much smaller as you capo up and change keys.
Exactly, man. And you can pick your speed up right there. That is a good point. Yep. I never thought about it that way, but you're exactly right on that.
It all pops up fast. Well, listen, man, the album we mentioned is on John Boy and Billy Ink. You're talking like you have something new coming out in 19. You gave me this album last year in Raleigh, and I'm just now catching up with you, for which I apologize. But we moved. We downsized, and I don't care what you call it. Moving is awful. I'm lucky to have the privilege to be able to move, but our daughter moved out, so we downsized, and I don't even know for sure from November what month it is. So. I meant to catch up with you before now, but I'm glad I did now. So, do you have something new in the works? You're talking like you're looking at songs now.
Yeah, we are looking at songs now. Sometimes I get anxious and want to get in there and start recording, you know, but, you know, you really do need, if you got an album that you really like and you want it to run its course before you really start putting other stuff out. And here, the last two that we've done, it's like we'll pick a single and send it out,
yeah,
you know, to the DJs. And,
right.
And because, really, if you send the whole project out, you got this guy playing this gal playing this, you know.
Right.
This way you can say, we're proud of this song and we want you to play it and send it to them, you know. And then let, you know, that kind of lets you say, okay, that's from a forthcoming album.
That's, yeah, exactly. And that happens. More and more people do that. I get singles
all the time. A lot of people doing that now. Yeah. I mean, it's just like,
It's a nice little build-up to the release of the CD. You had all that work done, and people are anticipating it. Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it, too. Not that I have a stake in that end of the business, but for me, on this side of the mic, I like that. I like that because I can say, here's a new one from whoever, and then it might be months before the whole project comes out, but then I'm familiar with that song.
That's exactly right, yeah. Because, you know, sometimes you don't have enough to do the whole CD. You know, if you're really particular, like we are, you know, and I'm sure everybody is, you want that to run its course and then get one that just absolutely kills everybody in the band and get it out there and let them hear that.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times people will put out a single and they'll be anxious and they don't give it enough time to really catch on.
Right.
And then they'll put another one right then.
That's right.
I don't think that's the way to do it. I think you get one that you really like, do a good job on it, get it out there, and just see where it goes. You need to give it time to be played, you know, by all these people. And I think that's the correct way to do that.
I think it is. More and more, I think that's the correct way. And it just makes sense. I mean, you used to release back in the day when they released 45s.
That's exactly right, man.
And, you know, then they went out and beat the trail and then came back and put an album out if they could, but 45s were. So that's kind of the same thing now with these singles. This is a great album, man, Terry, the Dukes of Drive, Terry Baucom, Dukes of Drive, Catch Another Dream. Thanks so much for taking some time and chatting.
Absolutely. Anytime you want to talk about my music today, I am free and happy to do so.
It sounds good. They can find you. You have a website, I bet, if they just plug in
TerryBaucom.com.
They can find you.
That's probably the best one. Or you can go to Knee Deep in Bluegrass.
Yeah. Okay.
Cindy's.
Yeah.
You can get in touch with us like that. But as soon as I get the new single, when we get him out, I'll be sure you get the first
one. Yes, sir. I appreciate it.
Because I really appreciate what you do.
I appreciate it.
I sure do.
I appreciate it. You tell Cindy I said hello. Many thrills in my life I've stumbled into, but getting to meet Cindy throughout this process is, to me, is an honor. And I mean that. So, all right, man. Listen, Terry Baucom, I'll let you get back to work and whatever else you're doing. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much for doing this.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Okay.